Hey, tonight is June 8th. It's the 15th of Sivan, and we're actually going to dedicate this shiur in honor of Yehuda Rothberger's fourth birthday.
Happy birthday.
That's right. So, hard to believe it's 4 years. It's also hard to believe that he was born May 25th and also Tesvav Sivan. But, yeah, that was that year when Hanukkah was in Thanksgiving, and that's what happens. Everything is really, really early. It's also hard to believe that we're already up to the fifth perek, and it's funny because I remember when I was in yeshiva and we learned beitza, so, you know, it was always interesting and it was good because, you know, you had a kind of like a feel for it because it was yontif related, so it was a little bit more relatable to your teenager than, let's say, some of the gemaras we learned, like gittin for sure, I didn't find as relatable, especially we did the fourth perek, so I was talking about prizbol and Avadim and Shtaros and stuff like that. That wasn't as relatable. But I remember that year also was an early year. And like Shavuos was over like, I don't know, end of May, mid-May. And then all of a sudden we're like, what do we learn about Yontif still anymore? Yontif is over. But there is what to say. There is what to do. And we have this last perek. And we're just going to focus on the first Mishnah and the first Rashi and the very interesting discussion that comes out of it. So the Mishnah starts out by telling us the following halacha. Mashilin peros derech aruba biyantiv, that you can literally throw fruit through a skylight on yantiv, aval lo b'shabbos, but not on Shabbos. And just to keep it very simple from the start, the situation that we're dealing with is you have some peros, and we're just going to call them peros, you have some peros on your roof to conceivably dry out, and you leave them there, and then you decide, again, not going to mention why you decide, because that's also something which is a little bit a point of contention. But you decide you want them in your house. So what the Mishnah says is that if it's yontif, and if you have a little bit of like a hole or like a skylight, so you can just push them and they'll just drop down. But you can't do that on Shabbos.
They had one-story houses back then. They didn't have two-story houses.
Right, so, but so you just go right down.
It was a small drop from the ceiling to the...
Yeah, but even if you had a two-story, I guess it could drop, you know, to the...
What's the problem?
That's what we're going to get to. That's what tonight's shiur is going to be about.
It doesn't seem like it would be an issue.
Right. That's the idea. Yeah. So that's exactly what we're going to get to. So let's just finish up the Mishnah just for the purpose of finishing the Mishnah. That if you have like a drip which is going on your roof, and say things are dripping, you can cover up the fruits that are drying up there. You could do the same thing for barrels of wine and also barrels of oil. And finally, venoselin Kli tachas adelef b'Shabbos, you can also put a utensil under the drip on Shabbos. I remember, so we were lucky to have my parents stay by us for Shavuos this past year. The last time my parents stayed for us for Shavuos was a long time ago. I think it must have been 7 or 8 years ago. And how do I remember that Shavuos? Because I remember it was first Tachnas to stay for Torah and Erev Yontif. But Erev Yontif was 100 degrees. The first day Yontif was 100 degrees. And the second day of Yontif was 100 degrees, and our air conditioner in the upstairs went like at 5:30 on Erev Yontif on a Sunday, so nothing was happening there. And I remember between Mincha and Maariv, there was just massive thunderstorm and everything broke, and the trees fell and so on, and like we were in the old building, and the old building.
Electricity.
So that one I don't know if we did as much. In the shul, yeah. But in that one, I remember what's called, there was a drip in the shul, and I remember I think somebody took a pot from the kitchen. Face, I know you weren't going to eat from those pots anyway. I don't know where they were, but and you're sitting there in Maariv, and all of a sudden you're like, drip, drip, drip. State in Mishnah. Right over here. Nosdim Kli Tachas Adelef B'Shabbos happened in Shavuos. I believe it was the year Tavshin Samach Ches or something like that. But, anyways, Tavshin Samach Zayin, one of those years, but we did it. Okay, so let's get to this first Mishnah and see what we're talking about over this first case about throwing the peros through the skylight. So the first thing Rashi starts off by saying is, "Misha yesh lo chitin v'sa'orin shtuchin al yada al gago lehis yabesh." First thing, Rashi is not translating peros like we would colloquially translate peros. We would colloquially translate peros as fruit. Rashi translates them bedavka as chitim and sa'orim. And it's brought down in the name of the Shita Nekubetzes that this is absolutely not a coincidence, because if you put fruits on your roof to dry, at the time when they are in the process of going from fresh fruit to dry fruit, everybody, even though the shitos that said don't hold of muktzah, will hold that particular thing as muktzah. Because you're madcha b'yadayim, you kind of like totally said, I'm not going to be using it because it's at the stage that it's transforming from regular fruit to dry fruit, it's totally inedible. That's what we call grogrosu tzimukim.
So if the stage in between for making it from fresh to dried is inedible?
I think so, yeah. So you can't use it that time. Yeah, that's what I've always been, under the impression.
I think it makes sense.
So, or otherwise, why would grogrosu tzimukim be mukta? Meaning, if you can still eat it, you can still, you know, it's a...
I mean, that's kind of a weird, it's just a weird transformation state.
Right. Or it could be, I guess maybe people wouldn't want to eat it, but the truth is, though, but why would you then need, you know, not
I mean, if I take a grape, so the grape turns into a raisin. So there's got to be, you know, it's sort of like a sunrise turning into sunset type thing. What stage does a grape, does it become inedible? When it's 3/4 almost a raisin? When it's 1/2?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the Bein HaShemashos for the fruit is. But I guess we can call it like a Bein HaShemashos period, but... In that particular thing there, everybody is moda, that moda, the grogros and tzimukim are definitely mukta. Chitin and sa'arim, you put them up there on your roof to dry, it's not gonna change out. So therefore, the first thing we're showing over here, Rashi is definitely cluing us into a factor, and that is, the factor is that we're dealing with not mukta. Okay? Rashi continues and says, V'ra gishamim mishamshim muvarim. What does he see? He sees that it's about to rain. Second night of Shavuos. It's about to rain. So what do we see over here? We say, He tirelo litroach ulahashlich derech aruba shabigag. Vehein noflim la'aretz. So what do we say? You let it throw it through the window and to fall down on the ground. And again, the issue is what? If there's a rain's going to be coming, what are we afraid is going to happen to the grain? The grain's going to get ruined. And Rashi points out that we're dealing over here with a situation of you're only allowed to do this to prevent the hefsed mammon. You can't, according to Rashi, just simply, hey, you know what? I want it. Let me go ahead and take it down. Okay. Now, here is the final key. And the final key, Rashi says, is why you're allowed to do this. Deleika tircha yisera. You're not, because there is no extra tircha. And that would be the problem in the first place. The problem in the first place would be you don't want to do something which is an extra tircha, an extra burdening yourself on yontiv. So, and Rashi points out that if you had to actually lift them up and throw it out a window, let's say you had a window that was higher a little bit up, to do that you wouldn't be allowed to do because that would be an extra tircha. So here you just literally kick them down and it falls down and that's how it works. So we see that such a behavior is mutter on Yontif, but it's usser on Shabbos.
Don't we have a sukkah, something, what is it with the pots and pans?
The kalim and stuff like that, you're allowed to bring the kalim in after you eat, yeah, because it's not going to make the place most, since I think it's also, yeah.
But without saying it's total, we can't compare a sukkah to a gog.
Right, I think it goes on to a substantial amount of stuff, as opposed to, say, bringing your soup pot in, or bringing your plates and stuff like that. That we wouldn't call tircha yaseir. Here we're talking about loading, you know, you're leaving stuff to dry. L'chlor, you're not leaving 5 pieces of wheat. You're leaving a whole bunch of bundles, a whole bunch of chitim, a whole bunch of sa'orim down on the roof to get it to dry.
There's a rain situation.
Yeah, there's a rain situation.
And you push it down into your house.
Into your house, yeah. Let's say you have like a little skylight on the roof. That's the whole. That's the whole zav. So then it will stay dry. Then you close up the skylight.
You go on the roof and you push your.
Yeah.
Or dried fruit is the same situation.
So if it's already dried, yeah, it wouldn't be a problem, right? Well, if it's drying is the issue. You know, the grogros are too mukta.
If it's dried, you can push it in.
Yeah, because it's not mukta. Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with a situation that the issue is not mukta. We're dealing with a situation that the issue would be tircha, and we're saying that the issue of tircha exists on Shabbos,
right.
But this issue of tircha does not apply on Yontif. We're not going to push it up the level for Yontif, but we're going to push the level up for Shabbos.
But that means, so you can't take a ladder, put it outside your house, climb up the ladder, and do this. This has to be done this exact way.
Well, ladder, we say that depends. A certain type of ladders are okay, right? Back in the first part, right? Right, definitely not Sulam Shel Shovach, but Sulam Shel Li, I believe you can do, right? So here's where we wanted to discuss a little bit. So we said that by Shabbos, this is an issue. Tircha Yisera. By Yontif, it's not an issue. What are we saying? We're saying that we're more machmir by Shabbos than by Yontif. And we just left it like that.
Is there an also nefesh factor?
Not necessarily, because, you know, if it's, you're not going to be in this stuff. Yeah, no, not necessarily. So you can, you know, if we left it like this and just said, oh, it's Shabbos for Machmer and Yontif for Mut, it's perfect. Totally fine, and life goes on. Except, I saw it brought down in the name of El Yashav that he has a question.
Oh,
Rav Yoshev asked a question based on the Gemara in the beginning of the Masechta, which I'll read it to you. At the end of the way beginning around Daf Beis, it says, Gaba Yantif, I'm sorry, right over here, Shabbos the Chamira below Asi Lizulzulebe, right? Shabbos is more Chamer, so we're not going to be Mezazel. But Yantif is more Kal, and there we're worried about the issue of Zilzul. So, Rabbi Yoshev asked, why over here do we seem to be going opposite? Here, we're not worried about the Zilzul of Yantif, we're worried about the Zilzul of Shabbos. We said before that clearly when we're dealing with... So that's going to be very important, what the context is. So that's going to be a context of Muktzah, and that's going to make a big difference. But I just wanted to give one side answer, and then focus on the Muktzah issue. So this question is already brought up by the Maharsha. And the Maharsha brings down this question, and the Maharsha offers the following teretz, the following possibility, and that is, why would there be an issue of necessarily not moving these things? So it's not as much as the Tircha Yisera, the Maharsha says, as it is more that we're dealing with Tiltul, which could lead to Hotzah. Then on Shabbos, we say that there's the Shabbos, the Isser Hotzah is there. Mm-hmm. On Yontif, we don't generally assume that there's an Isser Hotzah. Mm-hmm. So now, if we put it in this particular context, we could see, oh, so maybe all the way through, you know, yeah, when we're dealing with these type of Dirabbanan things there. So Yontif, we will definitely be more Choshesh for Zilzul. Shabbos, we're not going to be Choshesh for Zilzul. But over here, we're not an issue of, Zilzul or not, it's an issue of a potential zerah, a potential malacha. Yontif, there's nothing, nothing's going to happen over here. And what happens on Yontif if you actually carry the Sa'orim outside? Nothing. But if you went ahead and carried it on Shabbos, that would be a problem. So that's
even
one.
Even though we're pushing it in.
Right, we're afraid there. Right, and the idea of, you know, not being able to, you know, not ossering certain things because of, you know, we're afraid that you're going to carry it on Shabbos. It's a concept we see all over halacha. Right? We said that you're not allowed to blow shofar on Shabbos because of that. We cancel shofar. We could definitely worry about, you know, we sacrifice the mitzvah shofar and lulav, we could definitely sacrifice a couple of bundles of grain. Okay, so that's what the Maharsha says. The Rav Yoshev has more of a fundamental difference between the two over here. The Maharsha kept it as just within the space of, you know, specific malacha and specific context. Rav Yoshev explained it in a little bit more of a global nature. As we've been discussing in the Rashi, we said the issue was Tircha Yisera. Where exactly does that issue of Tircha Yisera come from? So the Ramban in Parshas Emor, as is brought down by Rosh Hashanah, it says, V'chodesh hashvi b'chol l'chodesh yelachem shabbason. Now, what is the idea of shabbason? The Ramban says shabbason means resting from work. Because if you think about it for a second, it's like this. Let's say a person decided that on Shabbos, you know what he's going to do? He's a little bored. Long Shabbos afternoon, it's the summer. Long Shavuos afternoon, so what's he going to do? Besides, he's going to take his gigantic set of dictionaries from the basement and move them all the way up to the third floor of the library. And then, you know, schlep all these books back and forth, fixing it and move the books from the upstairs and downstairs. And he's going to spend the entire day schlepping books up and down. Kind of like what you do during the week, right?
Some people might think of that to be on now.
Right. Some people might. But, you know, he's not over a single malacha. Right? He's inside. There's nothing. There's no malacha. There's no muktzah. But lemaisa, at the end of the day, it's not Yontif, right? It's not Yontif. He's busy fashvitz. He's busy running up and down the house the whole time. I don't know if you want to extend this to playing ball on Shabbos. It's a possibility of the same type of a thing, too. That it might be within the context of shabbason. You know, you're supposed to rest. Guy goes ahead and plays 3-on-3 in his backyard for 2 hours. He might enjoy himself. It's going to be like an onik Shabbos, but it's definitely not going to be a restful Shabbos. Even if he's not no milachas, he's not worried about trampling on the grass, and the bowl's not muktzah, and he gets everything all together, and he opens up his water bottles before Shabbos, make sure there's no plants around, no roses, no nothing. But it's not Shabbistic. If we're talking through this context, okay, that the idea of tircha comes from shabbason, which is a concept mentioned in the Torah. It's not a deoraisa, this particular thing, but it's a concept that comes from the Torah. Then we can see why there's a difference between Shabbos and Yontif. Because we know, like we started out the initial part of this year, if I went ahead and told you that, oh, we're more machmir on Shabbos because of Yontif, we'd say, oh, of course, because Shabbos is Shabbos, it's a chi of Misa, and Yontif is a lav. So once we're dealing with that over here also, it's easy for us to say, and we're okay to say that, we're more machmir by Shabbos than by Yontif. But when we're talking about the case of Muktza, the case of Muktza was proposed in terms of setting up muktzas of a Shema type of thing, and then we were talking, right? So when we're dealing with a muktza over there, where the muktza is based on a gzera, right? We assume we put in the muktza to allow you, or to make sure that you preserve the kedusha of Shabbos, or preserve the kedusha of Yontif, so then we already have a difference. Because since Shabbos, I give you the money, you give me an example, right? If you go ahead and see, like, you know, there's like an electrocuted fence or something over there, you see that there's something which is very, very dangerous. You could put up a small fence before something very dangerous, and a small fence will say, stop over here, high voltage over the fence, and that's going to stop people, because people are going to know automatically that's something really dangerous, you don't need so much. But if you have an area that's not as dangerous, so then you're going to need a little bit more. So when it comes to something which is based on the Gzera, so on Shabbos, we're not going to be as machmir because Shabbat, the Gzera itself is to protect you, but you don't need as much of a protection because Shabbos is there as the ultimate protection also from doing it, the Isser Shabbos. When it comes to Yontif, you're going to need more.
It's inherent.
Because it's very, you know, in your mind, you're like, hey, it's Shabbos. It's only Yontif. It's okay. It's not as big of a deal. So what's the chiluk that we make on something where the whole basis comes from the Torah, so then we're going to be more machmir on Shabbos than we would be on Yontif. Something where the basis comes from a derabbanan as a safeguard, like many of these examples of muktzah, so then we'll be more machmir on Yontif than we would be by Shabbos.